But hi, everyone. Welcome to the Wiser Financial Advisor Show with Josh Nelson, where we get real, we get honest, and we get clear about the financial world and your money. This is Josh Nelson, a certified financial planner and founder and CEO of Keystone Financial Services. We love feedback, and we'd love it if you would pass it on to me directly at josh@keystonefinancial.com. Also, please stay plugged in with us, get updates on episodes, and help us promote the podcast, and also subscribing to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast service. Let the financial fun begin. Recently, I had the opportunity to sit down with Richard Friesen, the author of the book Conversations with Money. Richard has a huge background in the financial industry, going back to being a forex trader on the Pacific Exchange and with Merrill Lynch. Since then, he's been a serial entrepreneur, building and selling tech companies, and more recently, he has been an author, a frequent guest on podcasts, and he's also the creator of Mind Muscles, which is a psychology that trains traders on how to trade. In other words, the emotions around trading. During our conversation, we talked about a couple of main areas. One of those was really the psychology of trading and money and how to not get emotionally involved in manias and panics that would lead us to doing something that we probably shouldn't do during those types of markets. Then we moved on to talking about what happens after somebody creates wealth, after they've got the income, they've got the wealth, what happens then and where true fulfillment comes from, which is contribution and lifetime learning, adding value and continuing to add value regardless of what your stage in life is. I think you'll find this is a really interesting conversation and one that's not only helpful for people that are just starting out, but also for people who have maybe moved closer to retirement or financial independence and really thinking about what's next. Enjoy. Welcome, Richard.
Well, it's great to be here. And it's always fun to talk to somebody who is dealing with money and other people's money, because that, as you know, that hits a lot of emotional triggers for a lot of people. And I would just looking forward to a conversation where we start to sort some of this out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, glad you could join us. So much of what we talk about here on the show is about emotions and psychology around money. Personally, I think most of people's financial success comes down to the psychology that they have around money. And so that's why we kind of go that direction with the show. But a couple of different things that I wanted to start off with. One of them is that you have experience actually as a trader. So you worked with a number of different companies and were directly involved and saw, I'm sure, a lot of manias and a lot of panics too. What's the psychology and how do maybe the average person, how do they defend against that at getting caught up in one of those big manias or panics?
If you can just imagine that, let's say, the dot-com boom, for example, some of your audience may be a bit young for that, but the technologies went up and up and you missed out. Oh my God, I missed out. Okay, I got to get in. Oh my God, it's going up higher. And now we're rewarded emotionally with every uptick. But it's not just the dollars. Sometimes it's the dream. And the dream can be, I'm worthwhile, I make good decisions, I'm a great investor, a great trader. This is going to get me my house, my Lamborghini. My parents are going to respect me. I'm going to get laid more often. We have all these dreams, and now they're connected to every tick of the market. Goes up, oh, wow, I'm going to get my dream. Because we have this emptiness, this hole in our heart, something that needs to be filled. And yes, we ask the market and our portfolio and our trading and our investments to fill that empty part. Now it goes up. Now it starts to ticks down. It ticks down. Oh my God. Oh my God. It's going lower. Oh Jesus. What am I going to do? My dream's falling apart. I can't lose my money. The news is really bad. I listen to the news. Experts say it's going to go lower, that this isn't the end. Oh no, the market's going to, I got to get out. Now, there's 100,000 people who've had that same emotional reaction and the pain of every tick lower.
Yeah, they're all going through it at the same time.
Yes. So there's no more sellers. I'll give you a story. In 1980 to 82, I worked for Merrill Lynch. I was a futures salesman. But fortunately, next door was the bond department in San Francisco. So this was the time, I don't know if you remember, their interest rates were going up to 20%. At one point, I went next door to the bond department and I said, and bonds, long-term bonds were trading like at 50 or something like that in order to compensate for the higher interest rates. So I says, how are your clients doing? What's up? And he says, well, today is the day. We finally got all of our clients out of bonds. We're safe. It's going to continue to collapse, but we've sold everything. I went back and I bought futures for my own account. Why? If Merrill Lynch doesn't have any more to sell, who does? And that was the exact bottom of the bonds.
Yeah, now, the period of maximum pessimism, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, I didn't have the experience as a trader back then to realize that this is not just a temporary bottom. So I took a tiny profit on
Sure. Yeah. And you know, that people at those extremes, people cash out, right? When they say, I can't take it anymore.
Oh, that is a good phrase. I can't take this anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard it. I've actually heard that from clients before when we get into those extremes, like the financial crisis, the October of 2008, mm-hmm. when financial institutions left and right were going broke. People were worried about the entire financial system collapsing. And a lot of people were at least contemplating that they were out on the ledge, they were getting ready to jump. And of course, we know now, of course, that would have been a very, very bad decision.
I got to raise my hand here and said, watch my retirement go down, down, down. And I got caught up emotionally. So told the financial advisor, let's get out. He argued against it, got out. And then it occurred to me that my own emotional pain was the best indicator that this is it. So I went and then I bought a bunch of futures to get back in. Not enough, unfortunately, but you know, it worked. But it was interesting in that my own emotional state was one of the best indicators that we were in a serious market transition and things were going to change.
Yeah, we can be our worst enemy on the upside too, right? When there's a mania, which, you know, a lot of people are saying that now, and who knows, this isn't investment advice. We don't know exactly when the top will be, but the stock market's been running for a while. Cryptocurrency, there's all kinds of areas that we could at least suspect that there might be a bubble. And it seems like anyway that people are continuing to pile into those investments. So it kind of works on that high side too, right? We can make some big emotional mistakes.
Oh, sure. Sure. During the dot-com boom, a whole bunch of people went into trading rooms. They started trading and making money and making more money. A lot of people turned $10,000 into a million and several million. And I've asked all the traders and I've, you know, thousands of students and everything. And I've asked, do you know anybody who went to a trading room who didn't have any experience and kept that money? And I haven't got one report back because emotionally, again, it's attached to a hole in our heart. This means something. I'm going to be a worthwhile individual. I'm going to have my dreams come true. Then when the market goes down, we've been so rewarded that we just get stuck in it and we ride it all the way down. So I think the lesson there is, and this is what we teach our traders, is that the market has different conditions, it's different moods. And if we get stuck in one of them, then when that market shifts, we're in deep trouble. Now, I'm sure as you advise your clients, is not to get stuck into any particular emotional or any particular market condition or mood, but look at the long term and be able to have a portfolio with risk management and diversity and everything that removes that kind of emotional sting.
Yeah, I think there's a natural tendency that when something's going in a certain direction, that we tend to get tunnel vision and think, well, it's going to keep going in that direction forever. Yeah, I think, at least in my observation, that's kind of why some of these things happen. People get caught in these manias and panics is they think, well, this time it's different. I think that's been said by either Warren Buffett or Sir John Templeton said that, this time it's different. Those are some dangerous words because it could actually lead you to not questioning and getting caught up in them.
Yeah. If you just look at the language, they'll say it's going up. That is itself is, you know, when I hear one of my clients say it's going up or it's going down, red flags pop up, sirens go off, because going is an ongoing prediction. You know, it has gone up. It went up sharply in the past. But when we say going, we are making a subconscious prediction. So when one of my clients uses the word going, I know right away that we have an issue to deal with.
Yeah. And of course, in our business, we're financial planners, you know, by trade. And so we believe in asset allocation. We believe in diversification. We don't consider ourselves traders necessarily, and we don't want our clients to be necessarily either. But mm-hmm. in a lot of cases, people kind of get put into that position. In a lot of our cases, our clients work for big high tech companies and they receive a lot of equity awards. And that ends up being if their company goes, which many of them are right now, they could end up with a lot of wealth and a lot of concentration mm-hmm. in that one position. So they kind of find themselves in that position where whether they want to be a trader or not, they kind of are. You know, they've got to still make some decisions. Yeah. So, you know, what would you say to somebody if you were talking to somebody that had a big concentrated stock position, other than, you know, maybe the destination is getting diversified, but sometimes, you know, they're trying to second guess themselves and wonder, well, when should I sell? What prices should I sell at? Maybe I need to get to, you know, kind of a round number, whatever it is. What kind of advice, knowing that you're actually a trainer of traders, what kind of advice would you have for that person, just kind of the lay person that finds themselves in a position where they have to trade?
Well, that's an excellent question. I had a friend whose husband passed away and she had inherited part of it, was around $4 million worth of IBM stock. And so she asked me, you know, what should I do? And I says, well, I have a question. What if the brokerage firm called you up and said, oops, we accidentally sold you out of all your IBM stock. Some guy made an account error. And he says, don't worry about it. We'll buy it back. If there's any adjustments in price, we'll take care of it. And my apologies if there's tax issues, you know, we'll manage all of that for you. And then I said, okay, now you have $4 million sitting in the bank. How much of that do you want to invest in a single stock IBM? She said, oh, maybe 20%. So what happens is our minds have an ownership bias. There have been all tests with all sorts of silly things that something we own, we value it more, especially since it was attached to husband. It has a lot of emotional stuff that we don't make rational decisions about that. You know, the challenge is, and I have two sons who both are in this category.
Yes.
Have made a tremendous amount of money being part, and it's just rewarded. And our minds keep thinking that it's going to continue. But of course, you know, we're always at risk. Things always shift. As you know, markets revolve and cycles change from technologies to value and to foreign to domestic. And there's all sorts of shifts in market patterns. And companies that do well, and there's some exceptions, of course, but they do tend to revolve. So the question then becomes, what do we do? And I think this is a really important question, because it's not just about, I don't think, risk and diversifications. It's about deeper. Where is our heart? What really is meaningful for us? What do we want from ourselves for the future? And this kind of money gives us the ability to not only ask that question, but we have at that point the resources to be able to amplify what's really important and what's meaningful. So
I like how you framed that, you know, as far as asking that question a little different, as if you were sold out of the position, how much would you buy back? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it makes people think a little bit differently as opposed to getting so emotionally attached. And also, yeah, we were visiting before. So two of your sons actually have been in that exact position where they work for tech companies or worked for tech companies, had a concentrated position. So you had the intimate knowledge mm-hmm. of how that works.
Certainly. So, you know, the deeper issue, if we say, what is meaningful to you? And a lot of people, especially engineers, go, huh?
We have a lot of engineers as clients.
Yeah. So my job is then to open some doors and invite them to look at what is the larger meaning, purpose, what is their goals downstream. Because let's say they have a net worth of $10 million. It's almost all of it is in their technology stock. And then we can say, so what would you like? And if, in fact, the deepest meaning is not, doesn't require a lot of resources, it's just free time, then you have it. You're there. So do you want to risk that longer term? If, on the other hand, you are an Elon Musk type person and you are shooting for Mars and boring tunnels and creating a whole new set of electric vehicles, what you may need for your mission in life may be a lot bigger. So the question to that is really where their heart is, where's meaning, and what's really bigger for them. Then you can start to look at, okay, at what point do we reduce the risk to your dream and to what you want? And at what point do we still leverage it? And of that, what is, how do we keep ourselves safe, you know, so that we are not risking everything in our lives so that we still have the resources to live out the rest of our life comfortably.
Yeah, but I think that's really what it comes down to for most people is that the investments, if you really drill it down, is it really comes down to people want income. They want income for the rest of their life. And really, that's what we're trying to solve for as financial planners is figuring out how do we convert somebody's wealth into an income stream, whether mm-hmm. that wealth was accumulated by starting a business and selling it, or it's in a lot of cases, our clients do have those concentrated equity positions that they've accumulated. And, you know, hats off to them. They also do a really good job saving and so forth. But, you know, that's a big shift when people actually move to retirement or financial independence, whatever they want to call it. And you're not retired either. You're still going. You know, you've got a number of different careers.
I can't imagine. I mean, I could quit.
You're having too much fun.
I have financial security. But, you know, again, we come back to where's my heart? And I feel an emotional rush as I say this. I want the world to be a better place for everyone. And how can I contribute? I have limited skills, very limited time. I have limited resources. So what can I do to make the world a better place? I can't obviously solve the Middle East crisis or COVID. But no. What can I do is to invite people to a healthier, higher level of operating. And I do that with my clients, with my students. And now what I notice is culturally, there's a lot of internal conflicts around money, wealth, and success. So one of my contributions now is my book, and it's currently titled Conversations with Money, but my publicist is going to change that probably to something a little sexier. But how can we reframe and define wealth and success in a way that matches our deepest values? And that's where I am, because we have disassociated and made wealth evil and bad and oppressive and made it racial even. I mean, people who come to me, they have really good hearts. They want the best for the world, and they get all these messages and they don't know how to do it. So my contribution and what makes a difference to me and why I am still working, which doesn't feel like work, is to help people be in rapport with success, wealth, themselves, and their relationships.
I think that's the reason why a lot of people don't like the word retirement necessarily, because for a lot of people, it's just what's next. You know, it's my next mission, whatever it is that I'm going on to. I might be done at Google or Hewlett Packard or whatever company that I worked for before, but now there's a what's next. I think we're all wired that way, that we have to have a reason to get up in the morning. And that reason, you know, a lot of it is contribution. People need to feel like they're still contributing regardless of where they are in their career, regardless if they're financially independent or not. I've worked with a number of people over the years that have sold a business or have accumulated millions, plenty enough so they're financially secure. And there's kind of an emotional high that ends up happening, especially like selling a business where there's a big chunk of money that comes in at one time. Mm-hmm. There's kind of an emotional high that hits maybe for 2-3 weeks, maybe 2-3 months even. But then, mm-hmm. you know, there's something that's kind of missing. And in a lot of cases, those people end up kind of back at work or back, you know, starting another business simply because that was where they were getting a lot of their emotional charge and energy from, was doing that. And certainly you found lots of ways to do that over the years through a, you know, multitude of careers, but now writing and, you know, obviously now doing a lot of training and mentoring for traders. Yeah, that's really neat. And you've been able to do that in your own family, right? You've got some very accomplished kids.
Yeah, it's, you know, you look at you back and you look at what's worthwhile. And that shifts with time, you know, and I look back and I'm just so grateful for my family and friends and developing people with a value system that really I feel is ethically and morally on the high road and looking for solutions to bring a better life to others. And that's valuable to me. And I think that what you said was really important, that after you retire, and especially if you have a lot of money, there's this emptiness all of a sudden, you know, especially, and I'll be a little maybe sexist here, but, you know, in the past, it's been mostly men who have driven hard. And then all of a sudden, kaboom, what are they faced with?
Yeah, I'd say that my observation would be that that's true as well. Not always, but, you know, with a lot of guys, I think a lot of us do attach probably more than is healthy, but, you know, a lot of us do attach a lot of our identity to our career, to our business.
Oh, I certainly do. When I had my .com business and the .com market started to collapse, 2 weeks later, you know, we needed like another $10 million to bring us to positive cash flow. We had sales and everything, but, you know, the .com crash, there was nothing available. And for 2 weeks, I said, oh, no problem. You know, I'm okay. I'm going to go out and I'll be a consultant. I'll do this. I'll do that. And I was covering up. I was pretending everything was okay, but at my deepest levels, it wasn't, because I had emotionally attached so much of my well-being to this company that when it didn't make it to IPO, it was so devastating to me that I kind of just quarantined that horrible emptiness so I wouldn't feel it. But as a result, it drug on for about a year rather than dealing with it. And so I really appreciate what you're saying. And I think that your contribution and your awareness of this can really help clients that you're working with.
Yeah, I'm lucky that I, you know, and not everybody can say this. I'm lucky that I feel like I get a huge amount of growth and contribution out of my business, out of working with clients. I think we make a huge difference in people's lives. But a lot of people can't say that. A lot of people are stuck in careers and things that they're not fulfilled in. They're kind of there for the golden handcuffs. And in a lot of cases, especially with these big high-tech companies where they have a huge amount of wealth, much of it is contingent upon staying. So oftentimes, you know, working a few more months can mean hundreds of thousands of dollars that would be left on the table had somebody left and kind of pivoted and done something different. Looking at that end of the spectrum, then we've talked a lot about people who have already accumulated wealth and maybe are further along in their careers or their businesses, or maybe, you know, retired or financially independent. What about the opposite end of the spectrum? What advice would you have to, say, a 20-something person that's maybe at the beginning of their career and they're hungry, they're driven? What advice would you give them as they're getting started?
What I emphasize, both in my book and with my clients, is how can you deliver value? You know, you have the traditional vision board and people put on mountain homes and Lamborghinis and beautiful women or men. And you know, this is the vision board. And if we believe it and manifest it, it'll come. But in my vision board, it's how can I deliver value to others? So I have this concept in the book and it's called Certificates of Appreciation. When I deliver value to you, Josh, and you give me some money, I look at it and I say, this is a certificate of appreciation from Josh. I have delivered value to him. The more value I deliver to the world, the more certificates of appreciation. And I have this radical notion, and this may give you a lot of blowback, and I'm sorry, you can edit it out. The more certificates of appreciation you collect, without fraud or dishonesty, of course, the more value you have delivered to the world.
think that's actually true. And, you know, I think we're all equal as people, you know, as souls and everything, but, you know, the marketplace, things are not equal and not all occupations. You think about a teacher, for example, may deliver an enormous amount of value, but may not get the financial rewards that somebody that, you know, works for Apple or Amazon or something like that might, or if they started their own business. So yeah, there's no question that things are not equal in the marketplace.
Yeah. Well, if you look at Martin Luther King, Mahatma Gandhi, Mother Teresa, you look at teachers. I know a teacher who made a difference in my life. Wow. They don't even know it.
Yeah.
The value they have delivered has nothing to do with money. So depending on where you want to go with your life, you can deliver tremendous value that doesn't have to do with money. But also, the world really needs a complement of all sorts of different things. It needs engineers. It needs, you know, lovers. It needs artists. It needs people with big vision like Elon Musk. It needs a whole group of people that are very diverse and very different and from that come from different backgrounds and races and genders, because that mix is what creates real power.
Absolutely.
But what I'm saying is one of those, it's very narrow. One of that part is people who produce a lot of value and get a lot of money. Use no need to apologize for that because you are delivering value with your particular skill set. So if you have a vision board of delivering value, then you work backwards and you say, what knowledge do I need? What skills do I need? What behaviors do I need? What do I need to believe about myself and the world to be able to deliver this particular value? Now, all of a sudden, then the vision board isn't about Lamborghinis. The vision board is how I can contribute and make the world a better place. Now, for some people, that is going to be a teacher or working in the inner city or working in the Peace Corps or whatever those things are. And they're using their skill set to deliver great value. For others, it's going to be more of a commercial venture, but still deliver value.
Yeah. Financially, we've seen study after study say that at about $75,000 of household income per year, that the happiness level doesn't go up a whole heck of a lot after that, because, you know, our basic needs are kind of covered. We're able to pay our basic bills and have some health coverage, things like that. You know, after that, it does turn into Lamborghinis and stuff. It depends on how high the dollar amounts go, but it never went to, you get into millions, billions. The studies show that people's happiness level doesn't go up just because of money. So it does have to be other stuff. It does have to be us delivering value, contributing to other things that are part of our life besides building wealth.
Yeah, indeed. In fact, if I look at my own clients and if they say, wow, if I can buy that mansion or if I can get that house in the hills or that, you know, that sport car or whatever it is, then I'm going to be happy. So they get it. But if you look at the actual process, the process is, I am going to be happy. They get that. There's a thrill. You know, you pointed it out after you sell your business. There's that thrill. And now what? Okay, now I have established a process of going to be happy. So then I repeat that over and over and over again. So my job with my clients is what I call the golden keys. And that is first awareness of your current situation, acceptance of it, and then asking ourselves, now, what do I want? So we start with where we are, and I include physiology as a big part of my coaching, our breathing, our tension, our muscular, because we hold so much of our emotional state in it. Then we look at our emotions, and then we look at the quality of our thoughts. And with that awareness of our physical sensations, emotions, and thoughts, we can now increase our awareness of where we are now. And then we can look at how those things drive us. And, you know, you talk about your clients wanting emotionally to do the wrong things at the wrong time. And then we can ask what we want. And once we can do that in the present, right now, what am I aware of? What do I want? Now I can develop that sensation of happiness right now. And it's not a process of going out there in the next thing.
Yeah, but I believe that as well, is that regardless of circumstances, we can all choose to be happy, regardless of kind of what's going on. And, you know, if there is, I love the way you say that too, is I'm going to be happy, I'm going to have this or that. Well, then it assumes that it's always off into the future. And of course, you know, we see the litter of celebrities and people that were chasing fame and fortune and everything, and, you know, just ended up with a mess of a life, simply because it was always off into the future. They were never able to figure out how to be happy in the moment.
Oh, man, that what you said, I think, is so important. I would like to underline it, highlight it, ring sirens around it, because if people can understand that and you can bring that to your clients and help the world with that concept, that will make such a difference.
I think for other people out there that are somewhere along the path, whether they are the young, hungry college student that's just getting started, to people that have made it, you know, they've built up the wealth and now, you know, they're really on to the fulfillment, the contribution that they're going to be able to do in their later years, in their retirement years. And I like it that you haven't retired. That's good. I think retiring is, it's overrated. I think there's always kind of a next, there's always a new mission to go on. And, you know, in a lot of cases, the cool thing about being financially independent too, is that the income is optional, right? As far as earning money for doing that, it could be volunteering, it could be speaking, it could be mentoring. There's lots of opportunities that you know, the world is seeking as far as having value added to it. And so you're a great example.
And when you think about contributing, a lot of people think of soup kitchens and doing stuff like that. But I encourage people to look at their knowledge, their skills, their beliefs, and their behaviors and said, I don't have to solve all the world's problems. What am I specifically good for? So it doesn't have to be a downgrade to something that is a waste of your talent and skills, but how can I now reframe my talents and skills in a way that is really exciting and makes a contribution?
All right. Well, thank you so much, Richard. Appreciate you taking the time to spend with us today. I think people are going to get a lot of value out of what we've talked about. Also, your book, Conversations with Money, a great resource around the psychology of money. And then also for anybody who is a trader or interested in being a trader, of course, the Mind Muscles Academy. But thank you so much for taking the time today. And yeah, I hope you'll come back someday. Hopefully, I think there are all kinds of different offshoots here that we could go on that could deserve their own episodes.
Oh my gosh, there's so many more topics we could drill down on. And I really give you an appreciation for really looking at, I think, the important stuff rather than just looking at symptoms of problems. And I really appreciate the depth that you bring to this. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Richard. If you'd like to support the show, please click subscribe either on Apple or Spotify or whatever your favorite podcast service is. And otherwise, just share the show. Share the show. Share the link in any of these episodes that would be helpful. Pass those on and let us know if there's any topic that you'd like us to hit in the future. I hope all is well. I hope you have a great week and God bless.
The opinions voiced in the Wiser Financial Advisor Show with host Josh Nelson are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial, or tax advisor prior to investing. Investment advisory services offered through Keystone Financial Services, an SEC registered investment advisor.